follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The headlines are crushed at a charity distribution center in the Yemeni capital Sana'a. Leaves more than 80 people dead and hundreds more injured. U.S. police use force to disperse protesters in the city of Akron, Ohio, after a grand jury refuses to indict cops involved in last year's fatal shooting of an African-American man. French President Emmanuel Macron is loudly booed by crowds in his first trip out of Paris after signing his unpopular pension reform into law. Our top story for this half hour. More than 80 people have been killed and hundreds more injured in a stampede in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Women and children are among the dead. Over a dozen of some 300 injured are in critical condition. The stampede took place during the distribution of charitable donations on the final days of the holy month of Ramadan. Hundreds of people had crowded into a school to receive cash handouts. Yemen's interior ministry said that the organizers of the event have been detained and are being questioned. The impoverished nation Yemen is embroiled in an eight-year war launched by a Saudi-led coalition. Tens of thousands of people have been killed due to war. Drought and blockade on the country have also pushed millions into hunger. Earlier, a correspondent in Sana'a, Yusuf Mauri, joined us to give the details of the incident.
This was one of the wealthiest businessmen in Yemen who held this event, and he holds it every year, last week of Ramadan. And, unfortunately, this was a tragedy that happened 8 hours ago because of the poor organization and coordination. The Ansar Allah movement is blaming the organizers for not coordinating with local authorities, but they're also, more importantly, blaming the Saudi-led coalition. According to Muhammad Ali Al-Houthi, this tragedy happened simply because, the people who were at this charity event, they've had their salaries cut for 8 years. They haven't had any source of income. The country has been besieged by a Saudi blockade that has prevented people from having access to put food on the table. Most, millions and millions of Yemeni people, they lost their jobs, they lost their source of income, which is why you had this area being crowded with so many people.
Police have clashed with protesters in the U.S. city of Akron, Ohio, after a grand jury refused to indict cops involved in last year's shooting death of an African-American man.
Get out the street.
Well, videos are circulating online showing security forces using chemical sprays and other weapons to disperse the crowd. Police tried to break up the protest, calling it an unlawful assembly. Demonstrators are angry at a grand jury decision to not press charges against officers who, according to them, mistakenly shot Jaylen Walker 46 times last June. Walker's family now says they will file a civil lawsuit against the city in the upcoming months. That's the same path the family of Tyree Nichols, who was killed by police early this year, has decided to take.
Today, we announce a $500 million landmark lawsuit against the Memphis Police Department and the city of Memphis for the torture, savage, brutal, dehumanizing, extrajudicial killing of Tyree Nichols.
Nichols' attorney also said that the lawsuit is meant to send a message to other cities that brutalizing and terrorizing black people will be wrenchingly expensive. Nichols was beaten to death by five officers in January after he was stopped for a traffic violation. The police killing of African Americans has been a hot-button issue for a few years now. Such incidents usually draw mass protests across the country, with people calling for an end to decades of systematic racism. And protesters also took to the streets in the U.S. city of Kansas to demand justice for a black teen who was recently shot and injured by a white homeowner. 16-year-old Ralph Yarl had knocked on the wrong door while trying to pick up his younger siblings. We discuss the latest incidents and other cases of racial violence against African Americans in our news review program.
Joseph Richardson, professor of African American Studies and Anthropology, joins us from the University of Maryland, joins us from Laurel, Maryland. Also, Paul Foote, emeritus professor of accounting at the California State University, joins us from Irvine, California. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. I'll start with you first, Professor Richardson. When you take a look at the issue at hand here, you have a couple. One is the fact that you have arms awash in the U.S., but of course the other is the racial discrimination in what apparently seems to be that. Do you agree?
I would definitely agree that we are washed in firearms in the United States. There are far more firearms in circulation than there actually are American citizens. So in terms of the firearms in this country, yes, we definitely are awash with firearms. And in fact, we live in a country where since COVID, we've had an increase in surge in the number of purchases of firearms, which I think reflects the culture of fear that exists in this country, which is often tied to black Americans and the criminalization of black Americans in the U.S. This case we've seen is very similar to what we've seen in the past in terms of white citizens exercising without much thought or provocation into wantonly shooting young African Americans, specifically African American men. We've seen that in the case with Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, as well as the case with Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, so what do you think, Paul Sheldon Foote? I mean, do you think that this is a combination of both? Because it's not just a race-driven shooting, at least from based on what we're looking at. And I think our guests there did a good job of comparing this to another case, but rather more the focus, perhaps, even though both are important, about the fact that you have firearms and you have this gun culture in the U.S., of course, as part of the second, I believe, amendment of the Constitution. But still, U.S. has probably the highest gun-related deaths in the world.
The highest among high-income countries, yes. That's correct. Not the highest in the world, but we're certainly up there. If you want to compare the District of Columbia, which he cited, their statistics are almost as bad as Latin America, which has been basically taken over by drug cartels. And that's part of the problem here. It's not just race. It's out of control. Large cities, most of our crimes are taking place in large cities with Democrat prosecutors. Though even in our safest place, New Hampshire, which is a small town, rural, their gun violence rate is five times that of the European Union. So across the board we have it, but it's not race only. It's drugs, lack of prosecution for any crimes whatsoever, people homeless, unemployed, the decline of religion in America, you name it. So it is true that the black homicide rate is much higher than whites, and the lowest would be the Asians. The Asians have an extremely low homicide rate in America. So we do have some racial differences, that's true, but it's not all race. It's part of control. We no longer have a country. We have enemies. The reason people are buying guns is not because of race, because of the totalitarian Democrats who want to take over the country and take away guns. Okay. That's why people are buying it.
Thank you so much for that, Professor Joseph Richardson, Professor of African American Studies and Anthropology at the University of Maryland. And Paul Foote, thank you, Emeritus Professor of Accounting at the California State University. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Workers in Argentina have taken to the streets to protest against the government's economic policies and demand more subsidies amid rising inflation. Protesters marched from the port city of Avellaneda to the capital, Buenos Aires. They also set up camps in front of the presidential palace overnight. The workers are angry over poor living conditions and a 2018 deal with the International Monetary Fund that forced the government to make cuts in social spending. The South American country currently owes a $44 billion loan to the IMF, which it has to pay by 2026, an unprecedented inflation rate of over 100%, as well as austerity measures, have impacted people's lives. Currently, more than 40% of Argentines are below the poverty line. Well, this just in, breaking news, a mass delivery of new combat and reconnaissance drones is taking place in a ceremony attended by top military brass in Iran, of course. We are going to keep you posted on the details of that story and much more as we get it for you. That's pretty much all the details that we're displaying right now. Moving on, Cuban lawmakers have reelected Miguel Díaz-Canel as president for a second term as he pledges to control inflation and the economic crisis.
In the immediate future, we must focus on food production, the use of idle productive capacities, the increase of foreign exchange earnings, the transformations required by the socialist state enterprise, the efficiency of the investment process, the complementary of economic actors, and the participation of foreign investment. All this is in order to increase the supply of goods and services and control inflation.
Díaz-Canel also blamed the current situation in Cuba partly on economic sanctions and corruption. He clinched the new term with nearly 98% of votes in the National Assembly. Lawmakers also reelected Salvador Valdez as vice president and Manuel Marrero as prime minister. Bylaw presidents are restricted to 2 5-year terms. Following the election, Díaz-Canel announced the ministers of his government who remain largely the same. Cuba's inflation has soared and tourism floundered since the coronavirus pandemic. French President Emmanuel Macron has been loudly booed by crowds in eastern France. This came after he embarked on his first trip out of Paris since signing his unpopular pension reform into law.
Yes, I shouted and said that we'll fight to be able to retire at 60 and that the French, like all French people, will continue to show our discontent.
I didn't come to see him specifically. In fact, I wanted to make sure that he would see that we would be present at every one of his trips. We're not going to turn the page on pension reform. It's been 3-4 years that every time he takes a stand or whatever, it's worse. He annoys people.
As Macron arrived in Sélestat in Alsace region, locals chanted slogans calling on him to resign while booing and jeering him as well. A local man said Macron's government was corrupt on a scale never seen before, telling the president he will fall soon. On an earlier stage of his trip, the French police pushed back dozens of protesters banging kitchenware ahead of Macron's arrival. In a village, Macron, however, seemed undeterred, telling reporters that such incidents would not stop him making visits across France and going on walkabouts. Macron signed into law the controversial pension reform on Saturday, which increases retirement age from 62 to 64. In continuation of the breaking news we had earlier, the Iranian army has received 200 long-range strategic drones equipped with various types of missiles. We're going to keep you posted on the details of that story and much more as we get it for you right here. Now back to Europe. Food prices there continue to soar, and in France they've risen almost 3 times the overall rate of inflation. The government has just responded with a limited number of price caps, but many fear that corporations and retailers will simply raise prices on other key goods. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
At a rate of 6%, inflation in France is still at its worst since the 1980s. However, new data shows that all-important food prices continue to push to unseen levels, having leapt a whopping 16% since last year.
I'm a shopkeeper, but I also grow wheat and raise cattle. So I can tell you that those who are raising their prices the most are the big corporations. The small producers suffered and tried for a long time not to raise their prices. But now everyone is raising their prices. For example, chicken is up 30% this year.
From April through June, there will be price caps on certain goods, following last month's acceptance by major retailers and middlemen of a government initiative. It's expected to cost them hundreds of millions of euros. However, many say they can afford it. Ever-increasing corporate profits have been the norm across Europe since 2009. And in the post-COVID world, many analysts say that corporate price gouging, government-approved speculation, and stockholder profit hoarding are the hidden driver of Europe's high prices.
Il faut prendre des mesures autoritaires.
We must take authoritarian measures. There's simply no other way. We must implement price controls, the indexing of wages to prices, and much more. But a government must have the will to do such things. And that takes us back to the necessity of choosing an alternative political path than our current model.
Polls show that 96% of France agrees with the statement that some suppliers are opportunistically taking advantage of inflation. Opportunism aside, the soaring prices are the enduring result of the West's failed sanctions campaign against Russia over the long-term unrest in the Ukraine. Instead of sowing peace and reaping low prices, the European Union is finding that belligerence backfires, and especially for the average person. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
In the limelight. Germany's Verdi trade union has called on workers in the security areas at Dusseldorf, Cologne and Hamburg airports to walk off their jobs on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. German national broadcaster Deutsche Welle has covered this story and tells us more. The German trade union Verdi called for all-day warning strikes on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April, for employees in several areas of Dusseldorf, Hamburg and Cologne Bonn airports. The strike begins on the night from Wednesday to Thursday and ends on the night from Friday to Saturday, Verdi said on Tuesday. The sectors to be affected include the aviation security area, passenger control, personnel and goods control and service areas. Longer waiting times or even flight cancellations are to be expected due to the strike, the trade union warned. Hamburg Airport said all departures would be cancelled or take place without passengers on Thursday and Friday due to a strike, with around 80,000 passengers likely to be affected. Arrivals will still be possible, it added. The reason for the strikes are negotiations between the union Verdi and the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, on time bonuses for night shifts, Saturdays, Sundays, and work on public holidays. Workers are also fighting for a better collective agreement on overtime pay for security and service staff at commercial airports in Germany. Despite the recent strikes, there has been no breakthrough so far. A written offer by the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, was insufficient, the union stressed. Work at airports must become more attractive in order to be able to keep aviation security specialists and recruit new ones in order to avoid longer waiting times for holidaymakers, Verdi representative Wolfgang Piper said. We call on the BDLS to finally present a negotiable offer in the negotiations on 27th and 28th of April in order to avoid further strikes and to end the conflict before Pentecost, he added. Warning strike at Deutsche Bahn is planned for Friday, 21st of April. Meanwhile, German media reported that further warning strikes were also planned at Deutsche Bahn and other railway companies in the next few days. An exact date is not yet known, but according to media reports, there was talk of a strike this Friday, 21st of April. The Railway and Transport Union, EVG, wants to announce this Wednesday how it will proceed in the wage dispute with Deutsche Bahn and around 50 other companies. At the end of March, the union, together with the Verdi Services Union, called for a major strike nationwide, which affected airports and ports in Germany, in addition to buses and trains. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A German union on Tuesday announced that it will launch a strike at several airports on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April, amid an ongoing dispute over pay and working conditions. In a statement on its website, the Verdi union said the 48-hour strike of security staff at Dusseldorf, Hamburg and Cologne Bonn airports will begin in the early hours of Thursday morning and continue until midnight on Friday. Passengers were warned of possible flight cancellations, delays and longer waiting times at these airports. The union is demanding an increase to overtime pay and surcharges for work on weekends, public holidays and during night shifts. The latest round of negotiations between the union and the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, ended without an agreement last week. We call on BDLS to finally present a negotiable offer during the negotiations on 27th and 28th of April in order to avoid further strikes, Verdi's representative Wolfgang Piper stressed. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story. Two German labor unions representing transport workers called for mass strikes that are expected to cause widespread disruption on railways and airports in Germany and cause travel chaos throughout the country. The strikes are prompted by wage disputes. The strikes, scheduled to start just after midnight on Thursday night and affect services throughout Germany, will be the latest in months of industrial action and protest that have hit major European economies as higher food and energy prices hit living standards. The Verdi Union is negotiating on behalf of around 2.5 million employees in the public sector, including in public transport and at airports. Railway and Transport Union, EVG, negotiates for around 230,000 employees at Deutsche Bahn and various bus companies. Verdi is demanding a 10.5% wage increase, with pay rising by at least €500 per month, while EVG is asking for a 12% pay rise, or at least €650 more per month. We represent groups of workers who literally run this country and are paid far too badly to do so, Verdi's chairman Frank Wernicke said. Deutsche Bahn and other public employers are offering around a 5% wage increase on average, along with a one-off payment of up to €2,500, generally below inflation, which was 6.9% in 2022, and is expected to slightly ease to 6.6% this year. We don't want any further escalation. We want a negotiable offer, said Martin Burkert, the chairman of the EVG union, which represents workers at 50 transport companies, including railway operator Deutsche Bahn.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
When it comes to European economies, the outlook couldn't be bleaker. So, Graham, this is what the IMF has said. Half of the European Union and one-third of the world facing a recession for the year 2023. The reasons? The war in Ukraine, rising interest rates, and high prices. A couple of the hardest-hit economies, the UK, France, and Germany, who are avid supporters of the Ukraine war. But what about their citizens? Shouldn't they be given priority over billions of euros spent on weapon supplies? That's the focus of this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guests. Peter Cronin, former World Bank economist, joins us from Lima, Peru. Also joining us is Shabir Rizvi, economic analyst, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me start with you, Peter Cronin, and let me ask you a very straightforward question when it comes to this topic, because this would set the stage, at least your point of view, and that is, do you believe that the disruption caused by the Russian President Vladimir Putin's special military operation in Ukraine has tipped several European countries into a recession and affected their economies, like raising their inflation rate in those countries and, of course, squeezing, for example, their energy supplies?
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you very much for having me. My quick answer is not at all. Absolutely not. The war has nothing to do with what's happening in Europe. Let me go through what I think and what I pretty much am sure what's happening in Europe. In one word, is the European Commission, the European Union, or particularly the Commission, is committing suicide, economic suicide, and they do it wantingly. When I'm saying Europe, I'm referring to the people of I'm not referring to the people of Europe. They are upset. This is one of the reasons why they are in the streets and strike from France to Germany to Italy to Greece and more. They are against all this money that flows to a war to kill more people, an endless war, basically, that can never overcome whatever they want to do with it. As long as the European Commission, as it is structured today, stays in place, and as long as the key European leaders are implants, and I call them implants, of the World Economic Forum, of the WEF, the outlook for Europe is bleak, not just for this year, for the coming year. Just to name a few of these implants, so the people around the world get an idea, Ursula von der Leyen, unelected president, accent on unelected. Olaf Scholz, German Chancellor, and before him, Angela Merkel. Emmanuel Macron, President of France. Mark Rutte, Netherlands, and many, many more. They are all have been put there in their position by the World Economic Forum. They are all have dictatorial strains, and some of them even tyrannical. They are all graduates of the World Economic Forum's Academy for Young Global Leaders. Not too long ago, I think it was either on or before the last Davos meeting of the WEF, Klaus Schwab has boasted that he and the WEF are proud having been able to infiltrate government the world with the WEF's young global leaders. Mm-hmm. That says it all. I'm currently staying in a country that has a WEF implant as president. That's Peru. Dina Boluarte is a WEF young global leader. Maybe you have followed what happened in Peru since last December when the parliament dismissed the elected president, Pedro Castillo, put him in jail without a trial. And the resulting chaos caused tens and tens of deaths. I think by now it's close to 100. Not to forget Christine Lagarde. She literally runs the European Central Bank in a European economic fashion's prison, I would say. She has recently been recorded saying that not only central bank digital currency or CBDC is the future, but she added already now paying for anything with 1,000 euros in cash is forbidden. It will be punishable by fine and even prison. So, yes, you heard right. She said it's prison. So, this is an economic tyranny, and under an economic tyranny, nothing can thrive.
Okay, just quickly, so I can get to Shabir Rizvi. So you're saying that the WEF is promoting this transition, if I may use that word, and with these officials that you say are somewhat handpicked, if I understood you correctly, from the WEF, we're looking at the way that these officials are reacting to the Ukraine war to be directed by the WEF in some sense because of the grand plan. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yes, you do. You understand me correctly. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
We can go back a step further and look at the Great Reset, which was written by Klaus Schwab.
Maybe we'll get to that. Let me get to Shabir Rizvi. So Shabir Rizvi, that was a very deep outlook there and point of view given by our guest, Peter Koenig. But let's look at what the IMF has said about the European Union, Europe as a whole, really, in terms of it being in a recession for the year 2023. And the reasons that it cited, which was in the intro, the war in Ukraine, rising interest rates and prices. So there you have it in black and white somewhat. Do you agree with what the IMF has said in its assessment, especially when it comes to the war in Ukraine?
Well, look, our colleague, your guest from Lima, has quite profoundly expressed the malaise that is existing in the European Union, UK, and the whole of the Western world, which counts for 13% of the world population, while 87% live outside the so-called European and Western sort of powers and nations. What you've got to remember is that the politicians, whether they're elected or unelected, like the European Union leaders, even the elected politicians really have no worry about not being concerned about their people. The German foreign minister not long ago said that, "I don't care what the public thinks, I will continue to support the Ukraine war." You see, in France, Mr. Macron, for weeks and months, demonstrations are going on in the streets of Paris and other cities in France so that the pension age is not increased from 62 to 64. And really, the parliament, they overrode the democratic process in parliament there, and it has become law in France. Similarly, in UK, strikes are taking place in all industries and all sectors, right, and the government is not really listening. So the reality is, Kaveh, is the leaders that are elected or unelected, they really have no concern about the ordinary people. They're there to support the 1% or the ruling elite and the decision makers, whether it's the World Economic Forum or whether it's the money mafia, who really controls what's going on in the capital cities of Europe and North America, Australia, and Canada.
Sure. We've got to talk about some of these countries in Europe, and I'm going to have the topic of UK be addressed to you, Shabir Rizvi. But first, I'm going to go over to Peter Koenig and ask him about Germany, what he thinks about that. You know, Germany is supposed to be the EU's powerhouse, but we're looking at how that economy is being severely impacted by this war in Ukraine. Basically, you have an energy crisis that Germany is feeling, along with supply chain blockages, aging workforce, and also how it's not no longer an export-focused manufacturing. But then you have the aid to Ukraine at $14.2 billion. This is the point here. How do you go and have your economy be affected by supporting a war where you sent that much, whether it's a military assistance or cash, and yet you have your citizens suffer in the way that they are, overall speaking? Why do you think these politicians are not heeding the calls of their citizens?
Well, of course, this is ludicrous. Supporting a war, they should do everything to stop the war, of course, and call for negotiations. But it's exactly the contrary. They want to do as much harm as they can. So, but again, I come to who is leading the European leader of Germany, the European economic leader, is Olaf Scholz. Olaf Scholz is a scholar of WEF. He has been planted there. He was, and Angela Merkel before him, she was also a scholar of Olaf Scholz. Of Klaus Schwab. So Germany is totally in the hands of the WEF. And the WEF itself is actually an executing instrument of big finance, but this is a different story. Right now, who calls the shots on Europe and the Great Reset is the WEF. And all the leaders that have been put in place, they do what the WEF asks them to do. I don't know how much corruption or actually threats are behind all this, but they do what the WEF wants to do. And that is supporting Ukraine against Russia. Of course, this is a drain on the economy in itself. But on the other hand, you know, Germany would not be suffering energy, would not have an energy crisis. Europe wouldn't have an energy crisis if they wouldn't sanction Russia. They're sanctioning Russia by actually not buying Russia's cheap energy, which has been running Europe's economy. So Russia is ready to supply Europe with energy as soon as Europe says we would like to go back to our contracts.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let me get an idea about what's happening there in the UK from Shabir Rizvi, because I could just throw you these two facts, Shabir Rizvi. The UK economy flatlined in February, no growth in terms of the GDP. And then you have major UK supermarkets that just as recent as March were rationing fruits, I think tomatoes, if I'm not mistaken. And at the same time, you have the UK to contribute, how much money have they contributed? Let me see if I have that in my stats. £2.3 billion. So explain that to us, how officials are making their citizens suffer there in the UK by rationing things like cooking oil and tomatoes while they commit this large amount of money to the Ukraine war.
You asked me explain. It's very difficult to explain madness. So what one's got to really understand is that there are three aspects that really hit the British economy very severely. One is that we've had mortgage increases, which have taken place from virtually 1% to almost 6% interest rate. So that's feeding in to sort of eating away the residual incomes that people would have had. Secondly, obviously, the energy crisis that we've talked about on this program and others, the increase in energy cost has almost increased by 3 to 4-fold in the last year or so. And thirdly, the manner in which the pay increases are not keeping pace with inflation, as we know the situation of junior doctors in UK being on strike, nurses perhaps going back on strike, the railway workers have been on strike, the post office workers, you name it, all industries, virtually, whether in the mostly in the public sector, have gone on strike, really to increase their wages and salaries, not to sort of extravagant level, but really to keep pace with inflation in reality. And, you know, the facts and figures are there that the junior doctors are earning 35% less than what they were 10 years ago, similar sort of figure with the nurses. So it's a huge impact that is taking place. Plus, I think what quite often we forget in commentary is that the level of poverty is quite high. There are some figures which are showing that 1 in 4 people live below the poverty line. And there's a term being called, thrown around by economists these days, the working poor.
Right.
The working, the income to sort of make decisions which would be supportive for their well-being. And in the UK, you have nearly 5 to 6 million people going to food banks on a daily basis. So, you know, it's a huge impact that is taking place here as far as the economy is concerned and people's living standards are concerned.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand. I mean, Peter Koenig, our guest, talked about or used the adjective madness. I mean, what are the European officials thinking, do you think, Peter Koenig? Because at the same time, you have the U.S. that has been now blamed by many European officials that they are that the U.S. is profiting most from this war on things like gas, which they're sending to Europe at higher prices, or when it comes to the subsidies that obviously are wrecking European industries, as we've been told, and some have actually relocated to the U.S., or when it comes to things like military equipment. Well, when they run out of military equipment to provide Ukraine with, they have to buy more, not only for their own security, but to even give Ukraine more military equipment. And guess who they're buying it from? From the U.S., under the umbrella of NATO. So go figure. Is madness the correct word to use here?
Yes. You know, if it wouldn't be so serious, I would have to laugh. Because this is absolutely right. You know, this has been created artificially. And my interview partner, he talked about inflation. You know, of course you have inflation. If you create artificially an energy crisis, which the Europeans had, I just explained before, then you create an artificial shortage of everything. And if you have an artificial shortage of everything, even fruit, I didn't know they ration fruit in the UK. Then if you have a shortage of everything, the inflation, obviously all of these things add together. It's economics 101, but it's all caused willingly by the Europeans in this case that follow the American dictate. You know, this is they have been put in place, these leaders, to serve the United States, but not the European people. And this is a crime, and this is a crime which I think should eventually come to justice. I don't know whether it will, but it needs to be pointed out that more people understand what's going on. And that's why I'm speaking so openly and so freely about what I think is going on in Europe. It is really a horrendous crime.
Indeed it is. And guess what, Shabir Rizvi? You have all of this happening, and then you have this piece of news come out just days ago that Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, and his entourage, I think was the word that was used, have profited $400 million from this. So I'm not sure what the White House thinks, the officials there, or whoever it is that's okaying all this money, when they hear this piece of news, including obviously Europe. I mean, you know, you can't put that into words because this shows that Zelensky, which from what the reports indicate, is guilty of this, is profiting off this war through fraud. Puts a different light on the situation, doesn't it?
Well, it was very clear even before the special operation by Russia that Ukraine was one of the most corrupt nations in Europe, if you like. There were many articles written in the New York Times and the Washington Post over the years prior to sort of Zelensky and the Ukraine cause has become the cause celeb, if you like, in Europe. Prior to that, it was very clear. Articles were written on a regular basis showing how corrupt the government was there, and the whole system was corrosive in an ethical manner. But what is interesting is that this is a sort of same thing keeps on happening to America. And obviously one can say that, you know, it's not unintentional. We saw this in Afghanistan, where there were, you know, thousands and thousands of soldiers on the payroll, but really nothing was paid. And the sort of the rulers at that time in Kabul were siphoning off millions of dollars. Similar sort of thing is happening here, where, you know, decoy companies have been set up by Zelensky and his friends and cronies who are sort of profiting by having armaments coming into Ukraine, whereby right. They can sort of milk the sort of funding organizations. So the reality is that corruption is rife, corruption is there. It's an epidemic really in Ukraine. And the sooner our elite, and the elite are not going to realize, because as I said, it's complete madness. But if the ordinary people realize that, you know, their tax payments are really being given to a corrupt regime in Kiev.
All right. So the last question that I ask here, because I think you're going to fill the rest of the time with this one, Peter Koenig, is regarding France. Now, it's really interesting how obviously France also has been impacted by this special military operation of Russia vis-a-vis Ukraine in terms of the cost of living crisis overall where France is experiencing. You have that on the one hand, and actually Macron does want this war to end. And he made that very clear when he visited China recently. But what came out of that trip was interesting in terms of his viewpoint, where he said that France should not, and Europe as a whole, should not be a vassal state of the U.S. Okay? So that's on the one hand. And that you have this large, extremely large business delegation that accompanied Macron. And guess who else accompanied Macron? The European Commission President von der Leyen, with huge, obviously, MOUs to be signed with China. Do you think that there is a break, especially after the French president's visit to China, when it comes to the U.S.? Of course, this was about China and decoupling from it. That may spill over to Ukraine now, if it hasn't already, and its support from the EU?
Well, it would be too much to hope for that there would be a break. But I think Macron himself is so full of himself and wanting to lead Europe that it would be very difficult. He also dragged along somebody who was not welcome in China at all. That's Madame von der Leyen. If you see the pictures on how she was received at the airport or not received at all, it tells you everything without even having to speak about it. And Macron himself, what he attempted to do, and that I guess was his role by the WEF, is separating China from Russia. Of course, there he failed miserably. So as an in disguise, he brought along business people to bring back hopefully some contracts. But I doubt very much how serious it is to break off, because if he would break off the Europe, if he would, his tendency would be to help breaking off Europe from the United States. That would be meaning also breaking with the WEF, making Europe autonomous again, bringing back Europe to a sovereign nation state. That would be a good thing. That's actually the solution that should happen. But I doubt very much that Macron is up to that at this point.
I would
really like to suggest something that I think is maybe an illusion, but many illusions have eventually come through. And this would be the famous Leninist question, you know. The most simple, and especially in the medium and long-term run, effective solution would be, you know, get rid of the Economic Commission, dissolve the entire European Union, and get back to jump forward to individual autonomous and sovereign nation states with their own currency. I think, you know, de-dollarize the economy. I know you're running out of time.
Sorry.
But I think it is important that this point is made and that people realize how bad the European Europe.
De-dollarization is being done. We'll find out in South Africa when the BRICS meet, but I'm sure a lot is going to come out of that. Thank you, Peter Koenig, former World Bank economist. Shabir Rizvi, economic analyst from London. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tafway and the team. It's goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters,
9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamate began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakah.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence Imam al-Jawad was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. We find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam economized when it came to spending upon himself. He lived a rather ascetic, simple lifestyle. But His Eminence Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spent a great abundant amount of wealth on the poor and the needy people amongst the Muslims. And it is precisely because of this unequaled and unparalleled generosity that Imam al-Jawad has been called and titled Al-Jawad, the Generous. This surname was the most particular and famous surname of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, to the extent that he was well known and famous for it amongst the people.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed imam, the immaculate and infallible imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. We find